Stealth Geek Unlimited.
Balls of steel.
This load letter. What the fuck does that mean?
This is Sparta!
We're going out, Mark. We don't come back. Avenge our dead.
All right. We're not worthy. We're not worthy.
My girlfriend sucked 37 dicks.
In a row?
Boy, I haven't been this creeped out since I saw that episode of Star Trek.
Come on, the wolf's head. It looks like a penny.
You can both suck my riches.
Oh, get a sense of humor, Rocky Dennis.
Welcome to an informative edition of Stealth Geek Unlimited. This week we're chatting with the proprietor of International Detective Dragons from Outer Space and one-fifth of the Gutter Skypes, Annam 5. Wes and I, but mostly Wes and Annam, discuss podcasting, role-playing games, Star Trek, Vincent Price, New Jersey, World of Warcraft, and Activision, just to name a few things. Prepare your brains for information acquisition in this episode of Stealth Geek Unlimited.
It's over 9,000!
Now fetch me Will Wheaton.
This is my boomstick!
Internet! So, dude, guess what I did?
What'd you do?
Sent out a bunch of emails.
Okay.
And asking people to come help us out with the show a little bit.
So this is the week we're talking to Annam 5, I'm guessing, because you mentioned this on
yes,
a previous episode.
Yes, the week we're talking to Annam 5, because I didn't mention this on another episode, but he's waiting in the wings currently.
Enjoying the free water.
Yes, the free water.
Yeah.
No expenses spared at the Stealth Geek Unlimited. Anyway, I'm going to give him a little nice intro here. Annam 5 has been alive since 1960, has been a geek since 1971, has been involved in professional theater since 1981, has been a computer hobbyist since 1990, has had a website since 1998, has been podcasting since 2006, and is so puffed up with his own self-importance that he wrote this introduction on the day of this podcast and emailed it to Dickie.
Nice introduction.
Yes. I'm sure he's very happy with that.
He's smiling in the green room.
I don't know. Is he? Are you?
I am happy with it. I wrote it.
Well, it was quite self-aggrandizing, but all right, you know.
Anyways, welcome to the show.
Yeah, welcome on, man.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for agreeing to come on.
It's a privilege. It's my pleasure, and I'm very glad that you had me on.
Excellent. So, we were wondering if we could ask you a few questions.
I'm listening with all my might.
I think that means you're supposed to speak up, dude.
Am I the...
Huh?
Sorry.
This is how the show kind of goes. We just kind of, make fun of each other, and then I edit things out.
Isn't it more fun to just, rip on each other and leave it all in?
Well,
sometimes, but...
It would have been a previous episode at this point. An upcoming episode, there's a long, long, long looper reel that I've entitled The Dick Farmer Soliloquy.
I think I saw a Twitter of that.
Yeah, you did.
That you posted. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it tends to get a bit nonsensical. Some of it you would never put in a podcast.
But it's good to listen to just for jokes, right?
Maybe you can put that on the bonus DVD years from now when you sell it as a package.
Yeah, right.
I don't think anybody would ever pay for the show.
I wouldn't pay for the show.
I wouldn't want them to, though. I mean, it's not the point.
Okay.
Anyway, I think, Wes, you have a couple of questions for Mr. Annam 5.
Let me ask you something, Chris.
Huh?
Let me ask
you're
you something.
You're asking me something.
Yeah, have you prepared anything?
No.
Are you just going to wing it?
Yeah, that's what I do, man. Perform best under, well, not pressure, but, you know. The Peanut Geller just made a...
He adopts, he improvises, he overcomes.
Yeah,
I do one of those things. Guess which one?
How well did that work out with Indiana Jim?
Not well.
Anyways, Annam, we're really excited to have you on the show. I'm a big fan of IDDFOS. I try and catch all the episodes, and when Chris told me, I was really excited that you were coming on.
Well, thank you. Very glad.
I just want to start by asking you, like, what we just kind of podcast for fun, just as, you know, buddies hanging out kind of thing, and way to sort of go back and listen in, you know, later on in life. But what sort of got you into podcasting? What was your sort of motivation to start doing this sort of thing?
I don't know that I could. I don't know that I'm 100% sure why. I really don't know that I have a good answer to that. There's, because I've thought about it myself. Obviously, anybody that gets into this much work, and you guys know just how much work it is, knows that it's not something that you're just going to keep doing, and unless you can convince yourself that it's the thing you want to do.
Yeah.
In 2006, when IDDFOS got started up, podcasting was still relatively new. I think it took about 2 years to really get some traction. And there were books out on it finally, and it was exploding. It was becoming very, very popular. And I was listening to other podcasts long before I started up my own. I think that's the way it goes for a lot of people. They hear they hear shows, and they think to themselves, I could do that. I could do that. I could do, you know. And certainly. So I thought I did. I thought I would. I realized that there were quite a few things, and it was a part of the whole podcast thing. It was a part of the whole internet broadcasting impetus, the wave, the momentum of people seeing that commercial television and the mainstream media was just so generically vanilla and ineffectual and not really talking about anything of any importance or interest, or were just simply trying to scare the shit out of you 24/7, that they just moved away from it and found their little niches. It's almost like it was very much, I think, like the websites going up a decade earlier, wherein you suddenly had the ability to electronically publish your own, for all intents and purposes, your own magazine.
Yeah,
you're right.
Online,
right?
You know, with as many pages as you want, and all the color that you want, distributed with a simple link to everybody that could get to it, rather than having to go to paper and print and, you know, put something out every month in bulk that needed a truck to get it where it was going.
Yeah,
this was an audio version of people being able to capitalize on. Well, not capitalize, but take advantage of the technology to very simply get their own points of view across on whatever they were interested in. And what I was interested in was some pretty funky shit. You're still explicit, right?
Oh yes,
totally.
Okay,
good. Very, very.
That's fine.
Yeah, it seems like podcasting to me seems almost like a continuation of pirate radio in a way. Just a means of giving the people their own voice and, you know, not having to worry about the laws that were in place. So, I mean, I think you're right in that it freed up a lot of people to want to get out whatever they had to say.
And the interesting, I guess, you know, unless I'm just making this up in my own head, and I might be, but I think it's true. I think I just summed up all of IDDFOS. If I'm not making this up in my own head, and it's actually true, the fact that you could have an interest in this specific form of Civil War reenactment, or this particular type of quilting, or this area of music, or, you know, whatever the really, really focused areas of interest, whether it was in supernatural or gaming or history or anything, you very simply put the podcast up, and that's what you were going to talk about, and an audience would grow simply because of the fact that they could find you.
Yeah.
In other words, your listeners gathered to that one particular spot because that's what they were looking for, plain and simple. You know, Star Trek, science fiction, fantasy, and the mainstream influences it like crazy, of course. I mean, look at the Harry Potter podcast. What the hell was the name of that?
I don't know.
I don't either. It was at the top of the, you know, they have their ratings lists, of course, and there was one that was at the top for a long time, and I forget the name of it, but because
I remember seeing that back in the day on Podcast Pickle or whatever else.
Yeah, so. It was always at the top. It was always there. It had something to do with the name of the school or something. But, yeah, mainstream media influences it, and if there's a podcast out about it, then whether they're interested in it or not, they're sure as hell riding the coattails of success of everybody on Earth freaking going to see these movies and buying these books.
Yeah. Nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that. You know, good. Great. Good for them. You know, great listenership. Hell, maybe they even got sponsorship. But...
Hey, maybe.
If they're lucky.
Yeah. Then there's podcasts that talk about movies and comics and science fiction and fantasy and television shows.
Kind of like ours.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they don't lock themselves into any particular...
No.
Pigeonhole.
Yep. That's why it's unlimited.
Yeah.
That is the reason.
And then there's yours, which is mostly based on ideas.
Yeah, I just... One of the things... There were really kind of two things that drove it. I used to say it was just this one thing that I only wanted to ask questions that nobody had a really good answer to.
Okay.
It's still interesting to think about.
Yeah.
But I think also I wanted to ask questions that I knew I was not going to see... dealt with on television or in a really very popular you know commercial paying proposition on in any media.
Right. I think you've done a really good job of that. Some of those questions are way out there, man. But not in a bad way at all. Like it's
well,
very interesting.
I like the thinking about them. I like the answers that I got. Meant from the beginning to be listener-driven, even though I knew I wasn't going to get any listener-driven questions or responses until I, you know, developed some kind of group of people listening to me. But it also was supposed to be something that could stand relatively well on its own over time, as questions that don't have correct answers and are universally applied to everybody on Earth. They should last a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's true. I mean, you can go back and listen to any of the episodes of IDDFOS, and none of them have lost their appeal. It's not like you're talking about a movie that's 30 years old or something that people aren't talking about anymore. The ideas still, you know, are interesting things to think about and talk about. So I think you've succeeded there anyways.
Thank you. Good.
I wanted to ask you, is there any subjects that you just absolutely will not speak about on your show?
Wow.
Has there ever been anything that's just come up that's been like, you know what, there's not a chance in hell I'm going to address that?
Well, let's see. I had the balls to go ahead and do a show about good and evil. I did a show about religion.
Yep. That was actually one of the first shows I ever heard of yours, actually.
Was that one?
Yeah, that was a two-parter. That was 29A and B or something like that.
Okay.
I at least gave religion two whole shows. It's kind of like, you know, you're not supposed to talk about politics or religion or stuff like that, but...
The stuff that'll just piss people off, right?
Stuff that piss people off.
Polarizes people, yeah.
Yeah, and it I don't know that there's anything in particular that I wouldn't talk about. Controversy is easy,
right?
For people that are paid to do it, because they'll fan flames, they'll go to extremes, and you do see that on television all the time.
Certainly,
you know, you'll have roundtable discussions and Jerry Springer style arena fights. Over abortion or politics or gay marriage or all the rest of that stuff. That's in the media all the time. People are constantly tackling that, and they keep sweating the minutiae over state laws and all this other different stuff. It's like, it's not really something that I was very anxious to get, either get my own head into or get listener feedback about, because if you're going to go into something like that, then all you're doing is deciding that I'm just going to piss off half of the people that listen to me and not piss off the other half. You know, depending on, regardless of which side of the fence you land on, that's all you end up doing if you decide that you're going to put this subject up.
Yeah, somebody always ends up angry.
Mainstream media. Yeah, so, you know, half of the people are going to be angry. It's like doing theater in the round. if you're in theater in the round, in a completely surrounded stage, even a director that makes not one single mistake in blocking, is going to show the actor's back to half the audience, 50% of the show.
Yeah.
There's no way around that.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, I the media will do that on purpose for ratings.
Oh, yeah.
And
that kind of sensationalist news stuff is...
Oh, yeah, they love
big
that
business,
guy.
Right? Yeah.
What I'm probably not going to end up doing is... what I'm probably not going to end up doing is the conclusion show.
Really?
The conclusion show.
The conclusion show. IDDFOS is standing as a body of work as it is. The next episode was scheduled to be a roundup of what was done between 60 and 80, and 81 was scheduled to be done on what people considered sanity and insanity, and frankly, that one's not going to be done. 80 is going to be the farewell episode, I'm afraid, gentlemen.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Which episode are we on now? 79?
79 is out.
So you are going to do one more episode.
I am going to do one more episode. It's going to be the goodbye episode. And,
oh, man.
IDDFOS is going to have to stand on its own.
That's sad.
It is in a way, and in another way, it's kind of good because beyond this, and I've had an email in asking, you know, what's up with the show? Well, is it on hiatus? That kind of thing.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question, is what's going on with IDDFOS, but I guess we know. Oh, wow, man.
Well, it's... If this goes out before the farewell show goes out, then you guys will be the ones to
break the breaking
story, as if, you know, as if thousands of people are just waiting on the edges of their seat for IDDFOS to come back.
I imagine some people are. I well, certainly
I gotta tell you,
was.
It's at least a couple hundred. I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean,
suppose our 20 listeners. I mean, you know,
I did have a good listenership and a very responsive listenership and. It wouldn't have gone on as long as it had if it weren't for the input that I was getting from some very intelligent people, some very thoughtful and creative and intelligent people that really did consider the questions. But I've reached a point in 2006 I was a very different person. I really was.
All right. Okay.
I had a lot of curiosity about what was going on. You know, I was 46 years old. I was looking around and I was seeing all kinds of complexities and realizing that nobody's answering any questions. Everybody's driving as quickly as they can to work and not wondering why.
Yeah.
You know, everybody is watching whatever was going on the tube and using the news as their periscope into what the world is. And just essentially forming their reality based on that, based on what they were seeing on.
Isn't it sad though? Like
it is. It was extremely sad, and all kinds of questions weren't being asked. And I thought, I just want to start asking these questions and find out if I was the only one that was thinking this stuff, that was wondering this stuff.
Yeah.
And so, and also to connect with, to kind of reconnect with people that I knew were out there. And this is going to sound weird, but the two podcasts that really got me into the idea of doing the podcast were The Roundtable from House of the Harping Monkey.
Yeah.
And Game of the Podcasting.
That's funny, because I said a similar thing to in my interview with Jim. Game of the Podcasting is one of the ones that got me into doing this as well.
Yeah. At 46 years old, I was listening to a podcast called Game of the Podcasting that had these three young, enthusiastic, creative, energetic people that really enjoyed each other's company, that knew how to kid around, and were talking about games and fantasy and pretending, and it sounded to me like I was listening to my own past. It cool. sounded to me like I was listening to all those conversations that I used to have when the party was over and everybody had gone, because the show was, you know, it was a closing night or an opening night party or something, and they'd light, somebody had light some candles, we'd break open the bottle of wine and just have these conversations. Right. And I just kept hearing these voices. I'm like, this is a replay of my past.
That's kind of cool.
It was. And it particularly happened a lot when I would listen to the science fiction and Star Trek. You know, this gives you an idea. In 1978, when I was 18 years old and graduating high school, the popular things that were going on were Star Trek, Star Wars, Battlestar Galactica, Lord of the Rings. Sound familiar?
Yeah.
Very much
that,
so.
Okay, so that, I mean, they were the hot ticket. Now, granted, Lord of the Rings was the rotoscoping of Ralph Bakshi, and it was like not really all that good, but it was the hot ticket, you know? Right. It was the thing going on.
Yeah.
So I'm listening to podcasts, you know, now, and I'm like, well, now, doesn't some of this sound familiar? So I thought, yeah, I can get into this. I could start doing some of this, and I started asking the questions. Started asking the philosophical questions. I was trying not to be pretentious most of the time.
You seem very tongue-in-cheek a lot of the time, though, so it doesn't come off as pretentious, right?
Good, I hope so.
Yeah.
But so far as the end of IDDFOS goes, it's really pretty much, like I said, in 46 I was a different person. Now, getting into some of these questions, aside from the fact that it is a great deal of work and it takes an incredible amount of time.
Chris can attest to that, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, Chris can attest to that. Yep. I also, and as I mentioned, I got this email saying, somebody said, you know, what's going on with it? And it was recent. What's going on with IDDFOS? I pretty much wrote back and told the fellow, you know, my outlook and my philosophies and my personal stance on things and just basically the way I'm processing my conclusions after the ends of these 79 shows is just kind of toxic.
Oh,
just
really?
Just to be 100% honest. And rather than take the remaining episodes of however long the series would go, however long IDDFOS would go, and spread depression and spread desolation and just be a big downer and a negative guy all the time, that's not entertainment. And I don't think that serves anybody, and I don't need to spread that around. So what we're probably going to end up with is just the questions asked up until 79, a farewell episode of 80, and we'll let that body of work just stand on the internet for anybody to take, because whether it's downloaded this year or 5 years from now, I still think it's a really cool question to find out what stuff you'd put in a granite block sent out into space.
I think it'll hold up over time. I don't think it's...
Yeah.
It's pretty timely.
There's some stuff in there that's dated, but the questions themselves are... They're just kind of... Gee, I wonder. You know who really kind of like blew the doors off of the podcast very early on? Derek from Texas, who moved to New Mexico and then moved back to Texas, and he did it with that one fucking book.
Which book is that?
Very important. Extremely important volume that you should very take note of here, because it had... The book is called Ishmael.
Oh, yeah, that stuff. I remember that.
And it essentially... Though I hated it, though I thought it was really, really badly written, and I didn't like the premise at all, and I hated everything that went on in the book as far as the student-teacher relationship and all that bullshit. the talking gorilla telling the guy about this, that, and the other thing about the human race as an animal that has strayed from being an animal and therefore is going to die.
Huh.
It's like, thank you. Yeah, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
But it did explain a whole hell of a lot. Because the key question that I asked, and what I've always wondered is, somewhere along the line, the human race must have made a wrong turn. Somewhere along the line, the human race. Yeah, that somebody made a mistake somewhere, and it was never corrected. You know, we went down some path, and that was the fucked up thing to do, and we weren't supposed to do that. Hmm. And it was that book. It was that. It was Ishmael, and I'm sure I'll come up with the author, unless one of you guys wants to Google it. I forget. Really, I.
Oh, I'm curious.
Quinn. The author is Quinn. Just look up the last name Quinn and Ishmael. You'll find it. Whatever. The idea being that agriculture took over the human race and spread like a virus and turned to civilization. And civilization is essentially a vampiric thing that has to grow and consume land and people.
Oh, I remember. Yeah, you were on about that for a few episodes.
Oh, God. Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. And it pissed me off because the gorilla was right.
He's still
pretty angry.
Yeah, so that actually, knowing that, really kind of explains a whole buttload of other stuff that came after it. It really does.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't recommend that book enough to anybody, even though it's a crappy story. it's going to make you mad. It's just one of those books that's going to make you mad.
Oh, well.
I'm interested.
How did I get onto that? Oh, I just wanted to mention, yeah, early on, somebody that really supercharged what came after that, because I had a whole bunch of questions that I didn't need to ask anymore. I had to come up with these weird space block questions and shit like that. Although, actually, I think that was 12. That came early on, so yeah. Whatever. So I don't really want to disappoint a whole bunch of people that want to hear more about what goes on with inside my head. I did discover though that there are plenty of people out there like me asking those kinds of questions, and I think there's a good chance that a lot of them are putting up podcasts that were very similar to IDDFOS. They're just not easy to find. So
I don't know. IDDFOS had such a unique sort of sound and style to it with the old time radio and the different. I don't know. It's just like I've listened to a number of podcasts, and none of them really have the same feel. I guess the ideas you're talking about. There's lots of people speaking about them too. But I'm gonna miss the show, man. It's gonna be sad that But I mean, if it's right, it's right. So.
It's one of those things that's got to come to an end, one of those things that can't last forever. And I got to tell you, I appreciate it. I'm very glad that it engaged you and entertained you to some, and was something that you maybe even want to share with other people. And it's going to be up there. It's going to last, and you can direct people to it as a body of work and just explain to them that, you know, this is self-contained. It's kind of like buying a whole season of some show that's been canceled.
Oh, for sure. It's like the Firefly of podcasting.
Okay, yeah, there you go. See, and I don't know, how many episodes of Firefly were there? I got the CDs here.
13.
13?
You got a lot more, yeah.
Yes, sir.
So I got 80, so there you go, the Firefly podcast. I aimed to misbehave, I misbehaved, and then I started, nodding off and said, oh, sorry, and then ended.
International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. I never look at the big picture because I can't stand watching horror movies.
I try to avoid sitting here thinking of what to say next. I like to make it off the cuff, spontaneous. It doesn't work.
All I want now, and all I ever really wanted ever since I was a little kid, is total omnipotence. Is that too much to ask?
I could even get out on a limb of wild speculation. I know, pretty odd thing to do for this podcast. I could fit your brain in a hollow pea, I swear. That's just two clear cuts, two black and white. It's all point of view, don't you understand? It's point of view.
Oh, man! Every other podcast is better than mine!
That's enough. Whining time is over.
No doubt, if you were paying attention, you detected a minor tinge of paranoia.
But this is supposed to be fun. I'm supposed to be doing this for fun. And if it means exhibiting false enthusiasm, I'm not above that. So I'm just going to apologize now and let's move on.
So what specifically are you worried about, Adam?
You would probably want to grab me around the neck with your arm and pull my head off. Did that make any sense?
But okay, Yeah, other folks can take it up and put up some shows too. Speaking of old time radio and being unique as a sound, and when I started doing those commercials from the 50s,
right?
I thought I was being so clever. I thought I was being so unique that nobody would possibly ever think of doing something like that, right?
Okay.
And yesterday, yes, it was. It was yesterday. I finally discovered that Will Wheaton had a podcast called Radio Free Burrito.
Okay. Yeah.
And yesterday, here in 2010, I finally downloaded one of his, or actually two or three of his 2005 podcasts. And what do you think he used as bumpers? Old-time radio commercials.
The question
and
is,
I'm sitting here going, "Duh."
Yeah, Wesley Crusher.
Did you do it first though, or
no? I was 2006, and I didn't even get to the commercials. I think until fall of 2006, he beat me to the punch, and that's fine. That's good. I mean, it's not all that brilliant a thing and unique. So it's kind of like, let's see how much stuff out there is in the public domain that I don't have to worry about getting sued about. Let's see this Kent commercial from the 50s. I don't think they're going to come after me for that.
Yeah.
So, but that was interesting to find out yesterday. So, yeah, folks, somebody want to do International Detective Dragon Smith? That's the other thing that's going to have to happen in the final show. I am actually going to have to explain why the show was called that.
I remember I asked you that when we did that interview way back when. You and I just chatting, and I asked you that, and I remember you said something. I don't exactly remember what you said. So I always tell people I know, but I forgot, you know?
that's right. Yeah,
I kept bugging him. I was like, "You got to tell me." He told you. He's like, "I don't remember." I'm like, "You're full of shit, dude."
I remember during the interview, you did ask me, and I said I was going to tell you, and I threw in that thing where I started talking, and then we did the static, where I threw in the static radio crappy reception thing, and then we came away from that with me saying, "And that's why the show is."
Yeah. No, I think we're just on a completely different tangent at that point. Like
It was a cheap shot.
Shoes or something. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. An easy laugh.
Yeah. It was good, though.
It was fun.
Sure. Yeah, man.
Okay, well, I'm just looking at my list of questions here.
Yeah, Wes is the prepared one here. I have a damn thing.
I'm kind of bummed out after this news of no more IDDFOS. So I'm kind of like, what can I ask him now? this may be a good question to sort of dovetail off that. What have been some of your favorite things that have happened that are due in full or in part from doing IDDFOS?
I can think of two things right off the bat, and some of them happened before I even started the podcast. The first thing is the inspiration of other people putting on their own shows, the inspiration of other people passionate enough about what they were doing or what they were interested in, putting on their own shows, so that I was essentially inspired to contribute to that.
Okay.
I was inspired to create something in support of that. An example of that would be essentially the bumpers and the little mini dramas that I started doing for other podcasts. And
I remember those, yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of like, I don't have a podcast of my own, but I really like what these guys are doing. I really like how much fun they're having, or appear to be having, going over whatever subject they're going over, whether it was the Mad Three on Game of the Podcasting, or whether it was Chuck and Lonnie, or whether it was the House of the Harping Monkey. I think those are the primary three that I started. Or does my geek look big in this? Sarah and Neville Fenn over in England.
Yeah.
I liked what they were doing so much and just created something new that I hadn't, and I hadn't done that in years. I hadn't done that probably in 6 or 7 years, and I used to record stuff just to mess around, and it got me doing that again. And there's a link on the Anim 5 website that says Audio Candies. It's a graphic. If you go to www.anim5.com, there's a graphic there that's got one of those cathedral radios
Right.
And it says Audio Candies. That whole page is just a whole bunch of the stuff that I put together, but down at the bottom is the mini dramas that I'm talking about. Episode of Dragnet for the Dragon's Landing Inn, a space opera, a space fight.
I remember those. Yeah, I went through those back in the day.
Yeah.
I listened through a number of them.
Yeah. So that's one of my favorite things, the fact that I was inspired to do something like that. And the other, I guess, event really was something that actually got me out of the house and into New York.
Okay.
Nothing does that except work, except, you know, doing it for pay because somebody says you're going to get fired if you don't.
Right.
And it was at the meetup at the TikTok Diner where I actually got to meet face to face with other podcasters. And it was just that's like an event to me. That's like going to Gen Con for me. Is going into the city and just sitting down in a diner and meeting these people that I'd been listening to for probably a year or more. That's another one of my favorite things. And of course, getting familiar with some names has just generated different relationships online with people that I just enjoy hanging out and talking with, and now, thanks to the Gutter Skypes, gaming with.
Yeah.
So the Gutter Skypes, I'm assuming, is continuing.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Oh, yes. The Gutter Skypes is a lot of fun. It doesn't harm anyone, and it is not likely to become toxic. It's not one of those shows that is likely to degenerate into something that depresses people. So, so yeah, and it's still fun to do and record, and there's plenty of variety there. Plus, I think I lucked out like crazy with the combination of people that formed it essentially at the beginning.
You've got a very good group in those people you're playing with, absolutely. Like the dynamic you have is very, very good.
Thank you. I feel lucky about it. I really do.
Yeah. Like, I remember I shot you an email and said, if you ever have an extra spot, I'm in. Like, that was why. I was like, I would love to game with these people one day kind of thing, you know?
I mean, that's just like an indicator. That's just taking the temperature of the show or taking the temperature of a gaming group. If you want to be in on that group, then something's going right, you know?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
The logistics, though, for Skype, one of the things that doesn't always happen and can't always happen is all of us getting together. And that was true when there were only four of us. Now that there's five of us, it's even more true that it's tough for five people to schedule. Even just putting on a headset and sitting down at the computer in your own home on a specific night. Things have gotten that crazy in the modern world. So when folks want to join the group or GM for the group or do something that involves six people getting together, it's like, well, you know, we can give it a try.
Yeah, but, I understand.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, like it's hell. Tonight is a good example of that. We have three people in this podcast thing going on, and Chase can't be here tonight. You know, it's difficult to coordinate anything like that. Yeah,
I think I mispronounced Chamby.
It's Chamby.
I mispronounced his name.
Yes, you did.
I'm sorry.
Well, I'll tell him you said sorry.
I said I was sorry. Yeah. Is he the one with the black belt?
He is, actually. I went to martial arts together. And,
he's a big dude.
He's like a 6'2", 280-pound muscle.
Tell him I'm really sorry that I will
do that. Next time I see him. I'm going to see him next weekend, so yeah, I'll tell him he said sorry.
I don't know if he's going to drive all the way up to Jersey just to give him the beatdown, though.
Not to give you the beatdown. he's into Kevin Smith movies, and he and Wes as well. We've always wanted to go down to Jersey and check out like the Quick Stop and RST Video and those kind of places. And I'm not sure if that's anywhere near where Edison is, but I don't know really the geography of New Jersey.
I don't think you need to travel all that far once you'd seen one or two of them. And honestly, if you visit something local that's similar, you've seen it.
Yeah, I think it's more
I
the
waste the gas. Honestly,
I think it's more the icon, like the you know, the whole. Well, what's the word I'm looking for?
I don't know. I don't.
It's just a, it's like a personal shrine pilgrimage thing. Yeah,
shrine. That was the word you were looking for. Yeah,
thinking about absolutely. It for a long time. I'd probably try and hop up on the roof and like play ball hockey or something like that. But
oh, man,
I think there was a time in my teenage years where I would have considered Quick Stop sort of my mecca, but. I don't really feel that way anymore.
Oh, no.
No. Just movies.
Yeah, I know they're just movies, but they're, yeah, it's a big part of my whole formative years. Anyway, which explains a lot, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I used to wonder about, there's a, that's interesting, really. That's kind of like, that makes actually more sense than being starstruck.
Really?
That idea of going to a place where a movie was filmed, because the place itself remains relatively the same.
Well, you, and, can
you know, even with buildings torn down, the rocks, the ground, the area, the soil, it's all still there. It's relatively the same. If every atom in your body is replaced every 7 years, then the William Shatner that played Captain Kirk in 1968 when the series closed has been long gone.
He's been replaced seven times or
something. How many times has, you know, 7 years gone by since then? I don't know the math, but yeah, the Bill Shatner running around today is, aside from, you know, as old as he is and looking, you know, looking like he's as old as he should be, is not even the same physical person that was in that show.
Interesting.
It's true.
I never really thought about it like that.
It's true.
I was never interested in meeting any of the actors. I just don't know why. I don't know why that is. I
like meeting them, but I don't ever get that feeling of being starstruck. It's just kind of cool. I don't know. Something about meeting a person who's an icon to you, right? I met Leonard Nimoy last year. I actually got a photo with him.
Last year?
Yeah. Yeah,
oh,
it was
wow.
pretty cool. He was at the convention. And I just, like, you see people and they're, like, shaking or they can't speak, and I'm never kind of like that. It's just kind of, I don't know, it's just kind of nice to say hello, shake the man's hand, say, you know, I really enjoyed Star Trek, and then be done with it.
Yeah.
I mean, I know you spoke about, hang on, I'm having a brain fart here, too. You spoke about... meeting
somebody
Vincent,
famous,
Vincent Price.
Vincent Price, yeah, Vincent Price.
Were you starstruck at the time? What was that like?
I don't think I was. No, I knew who he was. I think I might have. I was impressed by Vincent Price. In other words, I didn't equate him with any particular character, like Dr. Fibes or any of the Last Man on Earth or any of the characters that he played in
right.
classic films. I didn't equate him with that. I equated Vincent Price with himself as an actor, as a very, very accomplished performer over many, many decades. I mean,
certainly.
he was in the Saint radio series. He was in all those science fiction movies. He had a considerable body of movie work under his belt already before he got even remotely identified with horror movies. And then, of course, he was doing this one-man show on Oscar Wilde, and he did a superb job with that. So when I was shaking hands with him, it was like there had to be a little bit of being starstruck there, but not because, oh my God, you're the last man on earth, or oh my God, you're the saint. It's wow, you are an incredibly talented person, and I'm very glad I got to like meet you face to face and shake your hand.
I get that.
Yeah.
Whereas Spock as a character, as a fictional character, became there's no human being on Earth that could live up to that. Nobody
no.
could live up to that.
Certainly not.
You know, fortunately for Leonard Nimoy, he got to be the actor that portrayed that character, and of course, a piece of who he is, a piece of how he was brought up and what his acting style is and whatever, and a considerable amount of talent there, too. That became a part of it, sure. But I don't identify Leonard Nimoy with Spock, and I don't identify Bill Shatner with Captain Kirk or or Patrick Stewart with Picard, anything like that. I know this is the actor. I know it's a profession. It's a job. It's what they did, you know, to get to do what they do.
Shatner, I think, is a bit. Am I cutting out here? Because I'm not hearing myself. Can you hear me?
I'm hearing you.
Okay,
I'm hearing you fine. Yeah.
Okay. Shatner, though, he's done, to me, he's done so much with the stigma of Star Trek sort of following him around. I mean, he's had so many projects over the years. It's not just Star Trek's his only thing, as much as, I guess, the general population probably feels that way. I don't know. Well, I mean, you hear... Go ahead.
I'm cutting you off. Please continue.
I was going to say, you hear like... I don't know if you heard his, not the Transformed Man, but his other album, Has Been. I mean, he's poking fun at himself, but some of the songs were worthwhile that he'd written along with Ben Folds. And I don't know, I think that the fact that he can laugh at himself and just make, you know, he's got this sort of zest for life, just get up and go. Like, I respect that. I kind of, to me, that would be nice to meet him, to shake his hand, you know.
But yeah, to meet and shake hands with William Shatner, but you would be doing that for the same, you know, you would be impressed for the same reason I was impressed with
Vincent
Price.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Certainly, not just that he's, you know, Captain Kirk. I mean, there's so many people at these conventions that they had one minor role in a science fiction movie, and they're charging, you know, ridiculous amounts for autographs. And it's something to somebody to meet them, but.
Yeah, everybody's got a different reason for, you know, or a different aura that they'll cast around a human being. You know, that means nothing, and it's kind of like, it's almost sad. No, it's not almost sad. It's very sad to see fans that first lay eyes on some ingenue, some woman that was gorgeous in some film that they fell in love with when they were, you know, 16 or 17 and will never forget. And then they go to some convention and it's 35 years later or 20 years later or whatever, you know, and people are human beings. They can't be what they were in the film, not even 2 months after the film is closed. Mm-hmm. There's somebody different. And that aging process, it just, It's like they're not allowed to be human beings. You know,
yeah.
they disappoint. You know, they'll lay eyes on them. They're like, oh my God, look what happened. That's not really. It's like, yeah, it is. Deal. You know.
Yeah.
It's a film. It's a TV show. It's old. It's in the can. It's, you know, in the past.
Did you have a much opportunity to speak with Vincent Price when you met him?
Oh no, there was probably 7 or 8 other people around waiting to shake his hand, and he was trying to get out of there.
Where was this? Where did this take place?
This was on the Seton Hall University campus in South Orange, New Jersey. He was playing. He was playing in one of those. It was a gymnasium essentially.
Okay.
It was a big gym, and they had set up folding chairs, for crying out loud, like. They did the same setup that they do for the high school musicals, which, you know, and, you know, did he give a half-assed performance and not really, did he phone it in? No. He was a professional. He was a trained actor, and he sent it to the back of the house.
Awesome.
And he did an excellent job.
I just had to
say hi, you know, thank you very much for your work, and shook his hand. And that was it.
Cool. You got anything you want to say, Chris?
No, I'm good, man. I'm just chilling.
Freaking guy.
What?
he's you. Yeah.
I'm,
you're doing
I'm
all
just listening
the
you
heavy
guys
lifting
talk, yeah.
on this show.
You're say again?
All the heavy lifting on this show, Wes. I'm sorry.
Well, as opposed to any other time.
I'm not.
I figure I'd give him his day in the sun.
Oh, thanks. Thanks.
Well. You're the one with the list of questions, dude.
As I said, I prepared.
I did not, so far be it for me to impede your preparedness.
Yeah, this is, well, I guess it could technically be said to be moving at the speed of, like, plot, but,
this is BS, and I've got a short fuse for BS. Damn, you are all over this game.
Oh, what the hell? I'll just revert to form and shoot.
What in the name of General Grant's earwax is that?
God, that was awkward.
The Gutter Skypes.
All right, well, let me bang off a couple more questions I got on the sheet here.
I want to see if I can get you to drop a few more F-bombs on the show.
That was kind of unique and interesting to hear you.
Wes or me?
You. Your show is clean, so I always hear the little...
the little ding, yeah.
Yeah. we don't have one of those because I'm lazy. So
I got tired of doing that after a while, too. I mean, I know I said very early on, there goes the thunder again. I know I said very early on that I was going to try and keep it clean because, you know, but it started to get... The more and more I was discovering about the human race, the more I wanted to swear. I ended up doing that ding thing all over the place.
Oh. All right, well, let me ask you this. Speaking of Anyad, how did Anyad, your wife, feel about your podcast when you first started, and how did her viewpoint change when she started her own show?
Speaking from personal experience, I know that was a big deal with my significant other. So it's an interesting question.
Well, we had been together probably about 15. Yeah, no, wait a minute. I'm trying to get the years right. I'll get in trouble if I don't.
Yeah, careful.
Get the years right.
Yeah. And this is going on the internet. You're gonna have to get this right. Listened to by tens of people.
We had been together 14 years already.
Okay.
Before the podcast started. So anything that was going to, you know, shake down and get and cause friction or anything like that was really already pretty much by the boards. This isn't one of those things where, you know, I never get to see you on such and such a night, or you spend so much time doing this thing. We have always had our own interests and our own pursuits. And I mean, she's been writing. She's written a fantasy trilogy already. Her first book got picked up by an audio publisher in Washington.
Oh, wow.
Which book? Hosting the Casimir?
Hosting the Casimir was picked up by an audio book publisher in Washington when she was first starting to sell it. That was in the early 90s. She's still working on, I mean, she's written a trilogy and she's still working on books 2 and 3. And I keep telling her, it's like, I mean, I don't tell her. I think they're great. And she keeps trying to, like, make them better.
Right.
And tweak them and improve them because she's a writer. She wants her work to be, you know. But Hosting the Casimir, she's had her writing. She, of course, she's played computer games. Some people would say, well, how did she get into that? And I would say, well, she has me to thank for that enriching hobby. And I think what she would say is, you can blame that asshole. Yeah. it's true. I mean, we've got our own separate interests. So when I was doing IDDFOS, it was just one of those new things that, you know, that her nutcase of a husband was starting to get into and spending his time doing. And she's been asked herself, you know, what do you think of his shows, of his podcasts? And very frankly and very honestly, she will tell them, I don't listen to that.
She hasn't listened to any of it?
She's heard pieces of some of them that, yeah. I say, you really should hear them. But generally, she has to listen to me all day, every day. Well, not all day, but she has to listen to me every day. She doesn't want to need to hear a recording of me. So...
You know, I'm hearing some parallels with...
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing.
Yeah.
My significant other.
But it never actually... Although, one of the things that... I mean, she it wasn't one of those things she rejected outright. Obviously, she knew what podcasting was, what it was about, that, you know, it was people putting together something that was based on something they had fun with or at least had some degree of passion about. And that got her interested in doing her own because she saw that, you know, there was a reward behind it. There was a payback behind it. There was a feeling of satisfaction over producing something that stayed, you know, something that was tangible.
So, did she start FTH Radio? Did she lean on you when she first started for like technical advice and that sort of thing?
Well, I think she probably would have figured it out pretty easily for herself, but since I was there, what the hell?
Okay.
It's kind of like, you know, she knows that it's easier to just, you know, if something needed to be done, she didn't know how to do it. Yeah, obviously she'd turn and say, all right, now what am I supposed to do here? It was one point where, I don't remember what the exact circumstances were. It probably had to do something with a car trip or a road trip or something where I like could have died or something. And she said, now, you know, I don't want you to take a risk like that again.
Okay.
If you die, who's going to update my RSS feed?
That is the question.
That was before she actually started doing it herself.
Right.
Because she does it herself now. So,
yeah, you know.
Dude, I'm sorry. That's fucking awesome.
Oh, she's great. So, I occasionally contribute to For the Horde Radio for her early shows included Big V, who in game is plays a Tauren, and is referred to as Vi in the game. And on her show, he'd be Big V, and he had his segment called View from the Barn, and he'd read emails, and every once in a while, he wouldn't be able to make the show. You know, big shocker there. Someone not able to make a podcast?
Wow. Like, that's never happened before.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it would end up being a situation where she's got, like, 2 days, 3 days, whatever, to get the show out, and she's got to read the emails that she's gotten in because that's what people have grown used to. So I early on had done a voice thing for them going on about Orgrimmar and the different cities and Tauren, this, that, and the other thing. It was a character called the Angry Dwarf.
Yeah, I remember that.
I remember the Angry Dwarf.
Yes, and she decided to bring the Angry Dwarf on board as an emergency email reader. And so essentially I would go into that. But the thing that I'm happiest about, the thing I think that everybody there at FTH Radio, Auntie Ed, myself, all the people that participated, is their production of The Wintervale Tale, which is a World of Warcraft version of A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens.
I haven't heard it, but I'm going to have to go and find it now that you've mentioned it.
I sent the link to Dickie.
Oh, yeah.
It's in the same email that's got that intro that I wrote for myself.
Right.
I adapted a Christmas Carol to World of Warcraft, making use of Big V as the character playing Ebenezer Scrooge. It was a lot of fun writing specifically for the people that were a part of her podcast, as well as adapting a story for World of Warcraft. So it was kind of like doing two creative tricks at the same time. And they did a marvelous job reading it. The whole thing was recorded in one Sunday.
Wow.
Which was astonishing on its own. And that was just the dialogue. Then something like, I think, 60 to 70 hours of post-production work.
Oh, wow.
With music, with sound effects, mainly music and sound effects and timing and editing, taking out the pauses, taking out the bad takes, the you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And that was all Auntie Ed. That was all my wife.
That's intense.
She did Oh, it was insane. And they said, well, now how are we going to outdo this next winter? She said, you know what they're going to hear next winter? What? This. Because I ain't doing this again. And I don't blame her. It turned out so... It really did turn out really well.
I'm going to have to seek it out.
Yeah. Well, I'll give it to you. We'll play it before you take off tonight.
How long is it? Is it very long?
It's, I don't know. It's probably about 42 minutes or something like that.
Right on. Right on.
Just grab the link when you get a chance, you know. Or wait until Christmas, whatever. But I had a very, very good time doing that, too.